Chapter 2.
Exactly an hour later, Ebbick returned, escorting Admiral Wedge Antilles of Corellia. The aging military officer, upright and moving as easily as a man half his age, wore the full-dress uniform of an officer of the Corellian Defense Force, and a grave expression that concealed his feelings like a mask. Even through the force, Jason could pick up little of what Wedge was experiencing. Alertness, confidence that might or might not have been forced, a patience born of self-control. Jason rose from behind his desk to shake Wedge's hand. He gestured for Ebbick to leave, and she did so without speaking. Jason resumed his chair and gestured to its comfortable, high-backed double on the opposite side of the desk, situated there just for this conference. "Have a seat."
"Thank you."
Wedge did, his posture perfect, and Jason felt a tiny trickle of annoyance. Wedge had to know that Corellia was beaten at this point. He could have the decency not to pretend otherwise.
"I know you don't like to waste time," Jason continued. "So do you have a position statement for me?"
Now, at last, Wedge did look confused, if only faintly.
"A position statement?"
"As in, it's clear the Corellian position is hopeless, so I'm here to talk sense." Wedge chuckled.
"I'm here because you suggested a meeting with a top-ranking representative of the Corellian military or government. You're here because, having achieved a military victory on Hapes, one that has been spectacularly covered in the media, and let me add my congratulations on that, you want to press your advantage and conclude a peace with Corellia to give your brilliant political career one more boost."
Jason felt a flash of anger, and instantly clamped down on it. Wedge's words hit close to their target. If Jason could negotiate a peace here in the next few days, everyone would benefit. Corellia, the Galactic Alliance, and Jason himself.
"You're not in a good position to make accusations about other people's motives and ethics. Not after signing off on the coup attempt at Hapes."
He knew the anger in his voice was real. Wedge was silent for a long, chilling moment.
"Because I think you need to know, I'll tell you something that constitutes a Corellian government secret. I didn't know about the plot against Hapes. You already knew I had nothing to do with its planning."
"How would I know that?"
"Because it failed."
Jason almost asked whether belligerent cockiness was part of the genetic pattern of all Corellians, but he resisted the urge. His own father was the archetypal Corellian, and if belligerent cockiness were credits, the Solos would be the wealthiest family in the galaxy. Jason gave Wedge a condescending look.
"You don't need to offer a defense yet. War crimes trials haven't even started. And if your negotiation is particularly skillful, they might not happen at all. So let's get back to the subject. Admiral, your position is hopeless. The Corellian system is surrounded, blockaded, despite the fact that numerous planets made noises of support when Corellia took its stance of defiance. Not one has rebelled in support of Corellia. You are friendless, and you're running short of crucial supplies. The smuggler convoy that you expected an hour or so ago is not running late. It is entirely in our hands, with all its BACTA, all its munitions now helping the GA cause."
Wedge smiled.
"First you say we have no friends, and then you say people were arrested trying to bring us essential goods."
"They were smugglers, not friends."
"Sometimes smugglers become friends. Your father and I were smugglers who joined the Rebel Alliance cause. And now, Since you've seized those cargoes rather than paying for them, you can be sure that fewer smugglers will become friends with the Galactic Alliance. Are you saying that the GA doesn't need friends? Or just doesn't need friends like me and your father?
You're changing the subject again.
True.
Abruptly, Wedge looked weary, reflective.
I'll be honest. I'd like to see Corellia reunited with the GA. If it isn't, something very bad will happen.
Now you're talking.
If Corellia doesn't rejoin, if war truly erupts, I may never get my pension from the GA.
Wedge, I earned that pension. Decades of service. Be serious.
All right. I will.
All humor gone, Wedge fixed Jason with a stare.
You're dealing with a coalition government that hasn't settled in place yet. Frack and Sal Solo hasn't been dead very long, and the larvae are still wriggling out from under his rock. We need time to stamp them out.
You don't need to hurry. You don't need our answer today, tomorrow, or next week. And any answer you provoke in a short time frame is an answer that will make everyone unhappy. Sit back, be patient, negotiate in good faith, and I have every reason to believe that Corellia will rejoin the GA.
So you'll go back and recommend that Corellia surrender to us?
Wedge shook his head.
Never in 1,000 years.
What are you talking about, then?
I'll recommend that Corellia rejoin the GA. Full acceptance of standard GA planetary admission terms, but no reparations. No punitive measures, no extra tariffs, no under-the-table activity against Corellians, and a genuine attempt to undo the effort to undermine the general Corellian reputation that has been taking place in the GA population. Can you negotiate toward that sort of resolution?
I could. But if we suffer any more catastrophes like the bombing on Coruscant, all bets could be off.
Understood.
Wedge relented just a bit, some of the stiffness leaving his face, his posture.
So what are you going to do when the excitement's all done? Stay on with your planetary police force, or go back to wandering the galaxy and rescuing cubs from trees? You used to be pretty good at that.
Jason masked a twitch of annoyance by shrugging.
Some combination of the Galactic Alliance guard work and resuming my studies, I expect.
Has the political bug bitten you, then? Or do you just like the way you look in the uniform?
Jason sighed, exasperated.
Now you're joking again. And I think we've done all we can with this meeting.
I think so, too.
Serious again, Wedge stood.
Jason, may I say something to you not as an officer or negotiator, but as an old friend of the family?
Jason rose, too.
Something off the record, you mean?
Of course. No. On the record, off the record, it doesn't matter. As an old friend of the family. Can you listen as an old friend?
Still a trifle confused, Jason nodded.
Another old friend of mine, Wes Jansen, the galaxy's least serious man, except when he's killing the enemy or trying to make a point, once said this to me. The real sign that someone has become a fanatic, he said, is that he completely loses his sense of humor about some important facet of his life. When humor goes, it means he's lost his perspective. Jason, you've lost your sense of humor about, well, everything. And you're doing things you never would have done when you were younger. What does it mean?
Jason shook his head.
It doesn't mean that I'm suddenly a fanatic. It just means that I've grown up.
I wonder.
Ebbek is waiting outside. She'll take you back to your shuttle.
When Wedge was gone, Jason sat again and stared at the office doors, not seeing them.
Blast Wedge, he thought, as if losing an adolescent sense of humor has anything to do with fanaticism. As if...
There was a thought circling around the periphery of his awareness. It was something Captain Levent had sparked into existence, something Wedge had fanned into a live flame. But he couldn't quite bring it into focus. Well, then, he needed to look more closely. Captain Levent thought Jason used to be a hero. Clearly, if such things were measured by numbers of admirers, he was now a greater hero than he ever had been. And yet she thought he no longer constituted one. Why? Because he'd passed judgment on her? Perhaps. Maybe it was because the sentence he'd passed on her was one that would have broken his father's heart, or the heart of any smuggler. Perhaps it was because he'd hurt her where she was most vulnerable. It wasn't necessarily a heroic thing to do, he conceded. But it was fair, so let's dismiss that for now. Wedge thought the loss of his sense of humor meant that he'd become a fanatic of some sort. Whether it had or not, Jason had to admit, it did mark a change in him. Both Levent and Wedge had addressed changes Jason had experienced, and that recognition bothered him at some level. For a moment he tried to recapture a sense of what he had been as a teenager, before the war against the Yuuzhan Vong, gawky, happy, usually in the company of his twin sister Jaina and younger brother Anakin, all too infrequently in the company of his parents. His sense of humor, always present, had usually manifested itself in the form of awful jokes learned in the four corners of the galaxy. And then there were animals, Wedge's cubs in trees. Once upon a time, he'd been able to charm a sand panther into purring, had been able to coax the cub of any species into his hand. How long had it been since he'd done that? Since he'd wanted to do that? Animals. Evil animals. With their razory teeth and their hatred for Jedi. He snapped out of the half-doze into which he'd fallen, but didn't sit up. There was an answer for him. At the height of the Yuuzhan Vong War, he, Jaina, Anakin, and an elite unit of young Jedi Knights had mounted a mission to an enemy world, there to destroy the Voxen, creatures bred by the Yuuzhan Vong, creatures that could sense the Force, creatures that had hunted and claimed the lives of numerous Jedi before this mission destroyed them. But Anakin had been fatally wounded on this mission, had died. The children of Han Solo and Leia Organa Solo had suddenly gone from 3 to 2, had suddenly stopped being invincible, invulnerable, immortal. Suddenly there was no room in his life, no room in his universe for humor. And from that time on, animals had all seemed to wear the faces of Voxen. They were no longer his friends. Jason had been captured, ending up in the hands of the Yuuzhan Vong, ending up under the tutelage of Vergere, who was sometimes Jedi, sometimes Sith, sometimes neither. She had taught him much, including how to separate himself from pain or embrace it, how to survive when drowning within the Force or cut off from it, how to be human or Yuuzhan Vong or neither. She had taught him to distance himself from everything, should he need to. And now, more than a decade after those events, after her death, he could see another reason why. Only separation offers perspective. All learning benefits from perspective. Therefore, all learning benefits from separation. Which didn't explain why the smuggler's and Wedge's comments had nettled him. You're doing things you never would have done when you were younger, such as firing on the Millennium Falcon. That thought came to him in a rush, like one of Luke's lightsaber attacks, and Jason was unable to parry it, to deflect it, to pretend it hadn't happened. Several days earlier, he had ordered the long-range turbolasers of the Anakin Solo to fire upon the Millennium Falcon. I wasn't sure it was the Falcon. Its transponder designation was Longshot. You knew. The first voice was his. The second voice was a bit like his, but a whisper. More like Vergere's, perhaps. I knew it was the Falcon. I knew I was firing on my mother and my father. But I thought they had become enemies. I thought they had betrayed me, Tenel Ka, our daughter. So for that you decided to kill them? No. I knew the Falcon could sustain a turbo laser hit or two. I wasn't trying to kill them. Yes, you were. Jason sighed, defeated by the relentlessness of his own analysis. Yes, I was. I was trying to kill them. Because of what I thought they'd tried to do to Alana. And you were willing to kill Zek, even Ben, even Jaina, to accomplish this. Jason frowned over that. Not kill, precisely, he thought. I was willing to sacrifice them, though. For the greater good. For the elimination of two enemies who could have cost you everything. Enemies whom you know to be resourceful. Relentless. Yes. Then it was the right decision. But I was wrong. They turned out not to have been part of the coup attempt. Yes. But it was still the correct decision, based on what you then knew, or thought you knew. Jason nodded. And so you would do it again, if you knew, truly knew, that they were your enemies, that they stood between you and galactic peace, or between you and your daughter. Yes, good. The tones within his mind were more and more like Vergere's. You are still learning. And you are still teaching, even though you're dead. There was no answer, but Jason was calm, satisfied. His decision had been correct, flawed only by the incorrect data upon which it had been based. He could do it again if he needed to, and would. He was capable of sacrificing a lesser responsibility for a greater one, a lesser good for a greater one, a lesser love for a greater one. Lumia, his Sith teacher, would be pleased, if she was still alive. And he could finally recognize that the boy he had been, the optimistic, joke-spinning, animal-loving, kidnap-prone Jedi boy, was dead, slain on the same mission that had claimed his brother Anakin. At last, understanding what had happened, Jason did not miss his younger self. Finally, he slept.